Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Cause Stone Cold said so.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter, and today we are going to be reviewing and talking about the SmackDown that aired on October 23rd, 2020, the go-home episode of SmackDown, as we get ready for the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view that will take place this Sunday. But before we do that, guys, I want to thank you again for tuning in and for listening to the SmackDown review. It means a lot to me. I really appreciate it. I really enjoy doing this for you guys, so I hope that you guys are enjoying it as well. I also hope that you guys had a good week. I know I did. I actually just celebrated a birthday on Thursday, so that's always fun, as you guys know, and I'm a big fan of Halloween, so having my birthday be this close to Halloween is basically like a two-for-one. It's just always a really good couple weeks for me, and just the time of the year in general. I mean, autumn, fall, I'm a big fan of that. Not a big fan of the cold weather, so when winter really starts to kick in is when I lose interest in this time of year. But the trio of October, November, December, I am on record for saying that that is the best trio of months in the entire year. Just with the sports that are going on, you got Thanksgiving for those who celebrate that, and the holidays after that, just a lot of reasons to love this time of year. But before we get off topic too much, I want to talk about real quick a few things, or not really a few things, just I told you guys I was going to pay attention to see if any SmackDown superstars made an appearance on Raw, and as a lot of people noticed from what I've heard, is obviously Otis made an appearance on Raw, teaming up with Tucker as the masked Gordo, whatever you want to call him. I really didn't catch it, but I mean, I'm not gonna say too much about it. I'm sure you guys have already heard what everyone else has said. I know Matt's already addressed it himself, and a couple people that have called in on the voicemails, but I mean, pretty much, I agree. I mean, they couldn't even go one night, the first night of the season premiere of Raw, without having to reach over and grab a superstar from the other brands. Like I said on last week's show, though, them being in Orlando, all the superstars being there, I mean, they can't help themselves. So, I mean, I guess, I don't know what else we should expect, but I will say, as far as tonight's episode goes, there were no Raw superstars actually in the Amway Center at Friday Night SmackDown. The only appearances that were there, or that were made by Raw superstars, were Miz and Morrison for the Law and Otis, which no way we'll get to that whenever we cover SmackDown. But so we can be at least a little bit happy that SmackDown didn't use any of the Raw guys. Hopefully they keep that up. Raw being 3 hours, I'm not sure if that even has anything to do with it. I mean, they'll do it no matter what. But hopefully they can start to show a little bit of self-control and stick to their own rules. Because with everybody, I mean, I noticed that the fans are starting to be a lot more vocal about the whole brand split being not taken seriously. I know that all the hosts on this show, I've heard Matt say it, Anthony DeMarco said it. I mean, everybody knows that the right way to do this brand split is to keep your superstars separate. But I'm not going to get back into that, guys. We've already covered it. So we will do that. But one thing I wanted to comment on for NXT, because I know that there wasn't an NXT review this week. So I'm not sure who all or if any of you guys got to see it, but basically The only thing I really want to comment on is the main event, or with the NXT Tag Team Championships. For those that don't know, I actually am a big Pat McAfee fan. I listen to his podcasts. I follow him on Twitter. I mean, I know that he is not for everybody. He'll be the first person to tell you that he knows that people, or most people, can only tolerate him in small doses, or I know I just probably butchered that word, small doses. But him making an appearance, I mean, guys, he's actually a pretty big wrestling fan. I know he respects the business, and I mean, he's just a really funny guy. So if you don't know Pat McAfee, I would recommend at least looking into him. And if you do and you decide that you don't like him, then you will probably hate the stuff that's going on NXT, because he actually helped he helped Oney Larkin and Danny Burch take the NXT Tag Team Championships. But that's NXT, that's not SmackDown. I just wanted to kind of give a quick shout out to Pat McAfee. I love seeing him merge over here with the WWE, because it's like two worlds colliding for me, because like I said, I really love the Pat McAfee show, and I love WWE, so whenever they collide, I think that's awesome. But anyway, guys, we will now get to what you guys are here for, and that is Friday Night SmackDown. And SmackDown started tonight with, and the guest on the Kevin Owens show is none other than Daniel Bryan, who comes to the ring wearing his street clothes. And I don't know if it's just me, guys, but I've kind of noticed that Daniel Bryan, in the couple times that he's actually gotten some mic time since he's been drafted to SmackDown, he's kind of given off the general manager vibe, or at least to me. Just kind of, with the way he talks about like the SmackDown roster, it's just kind of really reminiscent to whenever him and Shane McMahon were the co-general managers, or however they had that going on with SmackDown Live. And he even does things like in this Kevin Owens show, you kind of hear him talking about possibly making the Intercontinental Championship defended every week on SmackDown, which we get to that a little bit later. But it's just kind of things like that. I don't know. I mean, it's just, he is a babyface. Kevin Owens is a babyface too. That's why this was kind of like a dual babyface promo. So I don't know. I mean, he's obviously wrestling. He has a match right after this. So I know he's not the general manager version of himself. But I just thought it was kind of weird. He's definitely putting off that vibe. But anyway, whenever the Kevin Owens show starts, they're kind of, like I said, it was a dual babyface promo, so they're both just complimenting each other. They both hint about the excitement of possibly working together in the ring. Kevin actually suggests that the two of them form a tag team, which is kind of funny. Kevin, or Daniel Bryan, actually takes a little shot by acknowledging how many times Kevin Owens has turned on people, like Sami Zayn, Chris Jericho, you name it. And it was, I guess it was just kind of funny. Kevin Owens just tried to skip over it and act like he didn't even say it, but he did acknowledge it. But before Kevin Owens could finish his plea to Daniel Bryan, and actually before I finish there, Kevin Owens actually has never won the tag team championships, which is true, but I didn't realize that. So I wouldn't be surprised if at some point here on SmackDown, whether it's with Daniel Bryan or Sami Zayn or somebody, I would not be surprised if Kevin Owens does eventually get his hands on the tag team championships. But before he finishes his plea to Daniel Bryan, he's interrupted by Ziggler and Rude. And there's no questioning which brand Dolph Ziggler is on, because he is wearing that SmackDown hat that he wore last week, just to let you know that he is a member of Friday Night SmackDown. But they come out, they're doing their normal heel promo. We hear a little bit from Robert Roode. He basically just says that instead of talking about a quote-unquote fantasy tag team, they should be talking about the greatest accusations in SmackDown history, talking about himself and Dolph Ziggler. But as soon as they get that point across, they're interrupted by the current SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the Street Profits. And I don't believe they said or did anything that is noteworthy here. They get interrupted themselves right after that by Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura, who come out and they actually make some good points. They say that they stole their tag team championships and that they were carrying the tag team division for months, which I actually agree with. I was pretty sad whenever they lost the SmackDown Tag Team Championships to the New Day, who eventually traded the belts with the Street Profits during the draft. We all know what happened there. But I was actually a big fan of the Cesaro and Shinsuke tag team whenever they were together. So hopefully they get a shot to regain those titles here coming up. But the announcers actually agreed that Shinsuke and Cesaro were carrying the tag teams. But before anything more gets said by any of the tag teams, a brawl breaks out in the ring. And it goes to commercial break. And shocker, shocker, whenever we come back, there's an 8-man tag match. It is the Street Profits, Daniel Bryan, and Kevin Owens versus Dolph Ziggler, Robert Roode, Shinsuke, and Cesaro. And this was a pretty solid match to begin with. It just felt like a pretty normal match that you'd see. As normal as it can be with an 8-man tag match. But I noticed that things really picked up, at least for me. I really started paying attention pretty hardcore whenever Daniel Bryan got in the match. And he looked about like what you would expect someone to look like after being out of the ring as long as he was out. He just looked a little bit rusty. He definitely wasn't mid-season form. But anyways, he's doing his flying around the ring. And he tries to do one of his signature backflips off the top turnbuckle to try to avoid Cesaro. And he kind of comes down on his knee wrong. And they start to sell a knee injury, which they keep selling throughout the match. Everybody on the opposing team takes their turn exposing that knee, targeting that knee, just doing a good job keeping Daniel Bryan from making it back to his corner. But whenever he does make it back to his corner, he tags in Angelo Dawkins, who actually has a nice showing, I'm not going to lie. He's not really known for being the wrestler in this group. He's kind of just like the strength, the muscle, whatever you want to call it. But he actually did have a pretty good showing. Cesaro actually tries to pin him illegally with his foot on the rope. But the referee notices, which causes Montez Ford to get tagged in, do his signature frog splash, and pin Cesaro for the win. There's really nothing that came out of this. There were no stipulations about what's going on with the tag team championships. So I'm not really sure what we can expect there. Like I've alluded to multiple times, the tag division's pretty thin. So Kevin Owens suggesting to Daniel Bryan that they maybe make a tag team wasn't necessarily the worst idea, in my opinion. I'm not sure if they're going to actually go with that. Kevin Owens has a absolutely under-the-radar match this Sunday with Aleister Black. It's not even been promoted at all. They didn't do any type of lead-up to it today on SmackDown. They're both on the same show. Aleister Black didn't even make an appearance on today's episode, so I'm not really sure there. This is probably just going to be a filler match or whatever. I'm not really sure if it's going to have any implications going forward, especially if Kevin Owens is already getting involved in something else. But as far as the rest of the tag team division goes, what you see is what you get pretty much. There's not really a lot going on there. Cesaro and Shinsuke are a formidable team that I think could possibly take the belts off of the Street Profits if that opportunity does present itself, or if a new tag team is maybe made along the way, they might be able to do it. But I think someone actually said that the Street Profits are the longest reigning tag team champions, or maybe they were the longest reigning Raw tag team champions before they switched something. They definitely had some type of record, but I can hardly remember any title defenses, or any memorable ones for that matter, that involved the Street Profits. So I don't know. I mean, something's got to happen with those belts. They've had them for too long to really not have any memorable feuds or anything like that. The only thing we can really remember the Street Profits for is that, whatever you want to call it, with the Viking Raiders, where they weren't even, I mean, you guys know what I'm talking about, the basketball, the bowling, the knife throwing, all that stuff. But after that 8-man tag match, we had the Law of Otis, or Law and Otis, sorry. It's like a play on words for the Law and Order. But anyway, before we get to that, there was a backstage segment with Daniel Bryan, Kevin Owens, the Street Profits. They were kind of just celebrating their win, getting excited or whatever with the Street Profits. But after everybody leaves, except for Daniel Bryan, he's approached by Sami Zayn. And Sami Zayn basically just, I mean, he's not, doesn't really seem angry, doesn't really seem, I mean, he definitely seems annoyed by what Daniel Bryan said earlier. It's what I alluded to about the Intercontinental Championship on the Kevin Owens show. But he just has this kind of calm demeanor about him where he just says that he doesn't appreciate him offering the Intercontinental title be defended every week, and that any future suggestions that he has about his championship should be kept to himself. I mean, I think this is great stuff from Sami. He wasn't featured at all. He was featured very small. That little clip that I just said, or that little 20, 30 seconds that he was on air, is all that he was on air for the night. So he was featured very small, but it was in a big way. Like, for instance, the Law and Otis stuff that I'm about to get into, that took up, I don't even know how much airtime, but at least, for sure, two segments, maybe even three. But the stuff that we got, that little bit that we got from Sami Zayn, in my opinion, was more impactful than all of that Otis stuff, just strictly because it may have started something. I mean, that's the thing. Last week, we were wondering, is something going to happen with Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins? At the beginning of the show today, is Daniel Bryan going to get... I meant Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins. I'm not sure if I messed that up. I want to make sure I was clear there. But anyway, at the beginning of the show, is something going to happen as far as a tag team with Kevin Owens and Daniel Bryan? And then right after that, Sami Zayn possibly teases maybe a start of something there with the Intercontinental Championship, which I think would also be very interesting. But that just shows you right there. Daniel Bryan's been on SmackDown for 2 weeks, and he's already had fantasy bookings with fans for three different guys. So that's just what I mean by Sami Zayn making a small impact, or making a big impact with the little bit of airtime he got, is because that possibly set up a feud with Daniel Bryan, and that gets the fans talking a lot more than this Otis stuff. But needless to say, we have to cover this Otis stuff anyway, so that's what we'll get into next. And yeah, like I said, that Law and Otis stuff was exactly like Law and Order. I mean, they were in a courtroom. I mean, that's not what Law and Order is, but I mean, if you heard the song, the little intro they were doing, you knew exactly what they were going for. But it was like a cross between Law and Order and Judge Judy or whatever, because they were actually in the courtroom. And the judge was none other than JBL with Ron Simmons, who was there with him. That was nice to see. But anyway, Miz and Morrison were there in the courtroom, and Otis is by himself. And JBL kind of starts to mention what exactly it is that Otis is being sued for. And if I remember correctly, it is emotional distress, destruction of property, creating an unsafe working environment, and quote-unquote money in the bank negligence. A little side note here, isn't it kind of ironic JBL talking about somebody being sued for creating an unsafe working environment? I mean, for those of you that know the rumors about JBL being a bully, for lack of a better word, to basically everybody backstage, or at least the lower card guys. I mean, there's a lot of stories that you guys can look up. and see on your own. But I just thought that was kind of funny, JBL having to say that, or at least it was ironic. But anyway, this was the only, like I said earlier, the only time in the night where any Raw superstars made an appearance on SmackDown. And it just so happened to be The Miz and Morrison. And in this courtroom, Miz kind of goes on about how Otis doesn't deserve the Money in the Bank briefcase. Miz thinks that because he's a previous Money in the Bank briefcase holder that he should get it. And Otis actually kind of just responds whenever JBL asks him what his response is or whatever, something like that. But Otis just says, "I deserve the briefcase because I won the ladder match." Which is simple, but, I mean, technically, he's not lying. Even the lady who is supposed to be the Miz's attorney, I guess, or whoever that lady was that was sitting there, she even said, "That's a good point." And she immediately gets fired on the spot. Actually, the Miz kind of stares at her like, "Are you kidding me?" Which I thought was kind of funny. I mean, from a segment that was definitely supposed to be a quote-unquote funny or comedy segment, you gotta at least take what you can get, I guess. Any moments that can somewhat make you laugh, and that was one for me. But after that, after Miz fires his lawyer, it says to be continued. And obviously now I know that they meant to be continued later on throughout the show. But initially, I thought that that to be continued meant next week. And I really was not going to be a big fan of that, just strictly because, like I've said, these guys are on two separate brands. So it doesn't really make a lot of sense to keep dragging this out. Later on in the night, more stuff gets explained as far as what's going to happen here, because the to be continued just meant later on in the night. But whenever I thought that they were going to keep going through weeks, I was really probably going to have a whole different reaction here. I actually had to cross off some of my notes that I wrote down because I thought that this thing was going to keep dragging on, but thankfully it's not. And we'll get to the, we'll get to more of this Law and Otis stuff whenever it comes on. But later, or after the commercial break, sorry, we get a singles match between Bianca Belair and Zelina Vega. Bianca Belair makes her SmackDown debut wearing SmackDown-themed gear. I thought that was pretty cool. And for those of you that remember, this actually isn't the first time that these two women's paths have crossed. They had that thing on Raw a couple months ago where the Street Profits were accusing Zelina Vega of poisoning Montez Ford. And you guys all know what happened there. But they didn't bring that up at all here. I mean, it's basically as if that never happened. But when I was watching this match, guys, one thing I noticed was Zelina was getting completely overpowered, and she was overmatched from the start of the match. And that's obviously should be no surprise given the size difference between the two. But it was just pretty glaring that Bianca just looked so dominant, I guess. I don't know really how to explain. I mean, I don't really want to make this comparison yet, but I said it when I was watching it, so I'm going to go ahead and say it now. But Bianca Belair was doing things that I really haven't seen a female wrestler do since China. And I know that is very high praise, but just when you look at how she's built, because I know there's been strong wrestlers since then, like Beth Phoenix, obviously, and Nia Jax is strong. I mean, there's been strong women's wrestlers, but for some reason, when I see Bianca Belair and the way she's built, I mean, she's muscular. She's very strong. You can tell that she definitely lifts weights. And I don't know what it is. Whenever she did that military press and she was just carrying Zelina Vega across the ring, the first thing that came to my mind was, wow, that looks like China. So, I don't know. Definitely mean that as a compliment, of course. But that just shows a lot of how I feel about Bianca Belair. I have no doubt that at some point, probably sooner rather than later, she is going to be the SmackDown Women's Champion. But after this one, we have Lars Sullivan versus Shorty G. And this one, really, we didn't really get an explanation. It wasn't promoted. But Shorty does come out to the ring and cuts a promo before the match. And he kind of lets us know why. I mean, he addresses, he says that he's tired of being disrespected, so he called out Lars to prove that he belongs here. So they let us know how the match became a thing. Apparently Shorty G is the one who challenged him, which is kind of surprising considering how the match actually went. Last week I was talking about how Jeff Hardy actually made the match surprisingly competitive against Lars Sullivan. This was not the case this week. Shorty G was dominated from basically the start of the match to the end, which it wasn't a long match, but it took an eye gouge for Shorty to get any type of offense in at all, and that didn't even last long because Lars picks up the win in less than 5 minutes, and this is kind of the Lars Sullivan I was expecting, just dominating people. But there might have actually been more to it than Lars Sullivan, because after the match, Shorty G is kind of laying there on the bottom rope, just, you know, looking lifeless, like he just got the crap beat out of him. And Caleb Braxton walks over to him and kind of just asks him how he feels after the match, which I thought was kind of weird. They usually don't do that immediately after the match unless it's for something, and that was the case here, because whenever she asks how he feels, he responds with, "I quit." Kind of similar to what Austin Theory did this past week on NXT, except he doesn't drive off. They kind of just let the suspense build as if he just quit the WWE or whatever, Friday Night SmackDown, however they were going to go about that. But before the suspense builds too much, they show Shorty G in the back training area. Looks like he's kind of dealing with a little injury. But Adam Pearce approaches him and basically just says, "Hey, did I hear what I thought I heard? Did you just quit?" And Shorty responds with, "I did quit," being Shorty G. And right then, you kind of knew exactly what was happening, which I actually like. I don't really know anybody who was a fan of the whole Shorty G thing. And Chad Gable actually buries it right here. Says that he's tired of being disrespected. He basically says that he is tired of being a punching bag. He's tired of making people think that they can achieve what they want because they can't. He says that only one man can achieve anything he wants, and his name is Chad Gable. I wasn't really sure if this was a heel turn here or if it was just a edgy babyface, because there really wasn't. I mean, he has every reason in the world to feel the way he does. I want to start by saying that. I have thought that this was a joke. I was a fan of Chad Gable. If WWE wasn't so quick to just split up tag teams, imagine what American Alpha would be right now with Chad Gable and Jason Jordan. I mean, that's just one of the tag teams that they've just completely mishandled. And now look. But anyways, I'm a big fan. If they're really serious, I mean, and it appears that they are about being done with the Shorty G thing, it's better late than never, in my opinion. Definitely should have been done a long time ago, but I'm glad that they are doing it now. And hopefully he can go back to building some respect, because like multiple people have said, they're really just overdoing it with the whole him being short thing. He's definitely not the shortest guy on the roster. And I just think it's kind of weird. Before he got his haircut, whenever he still had his long hair, he never appeared to me that he was that short. It never just seemed like jumped out that, dang, Chad Gable's short, until he got his haircut. And I think that maybe other people noticed that too, and that might have been the worst thing that he could have ever done, because that's whenever his career took a turn for the worst. Hopefully it's getting back on track here whenever he can get some credibility to his character and go forward as Chad Gable. Moving on here to the SmackDown Women's Championship feud between Bayley and Sasha Banks. Bayley has her weekly promo where she's sitting in a chair in the middle of the ring. This time she's complaining about how people won't stop asking her about Sasha in her interviews. She said that she hasn't and she won't sign the contract. And she's not really saying anything that we haven't heard her say yet. I'm actually kind of, which I hate to say, but I'm kind of ready for this to either get moving or get over something, because they really have taken a lot of the excitement that I had in this whenever they rushed it. I thought they could have really milked this, but they decided to rush it and have their initial match on SmackDown instead of waiting and having it be at the pay-per-view. So now the fans are kind of just ready for this thing to get going. And when Bayley is cutting this promo, she gets interrupted by Sasha, who comes to the ring holding the contract in her hands. She tells her to sign it, and Bayley obviously says no, she's not going to. And then while they're standing in the ring, Bayley kind of tries to sneak attack her with a chair, and Sasha ducks it and then picks up the title, which Bayley dropped, and it ultimately stops Bayley in her tracks, which I thought was kind of weird. I mean, you still have a steel chair in your hand, why not just start swinging it? But nonetheless, she stops, and then she tries to grab the title back, but all that does is causes her to end up eating a knee to the face. And then Sasha traps her in the chair, trying to get her to sign the contract that way, trying to force her to do it. She keeps fighting. She eventually manages to squirm away from the position that she initially had, or that Sasha initially had her in. But that might not have been the best idea, because then she puts herself in a position where Sasha locks her in a submission move inside the chair that looked a lot similar to the Steiner recliner. And Bayley eventually signs the contract just to get her to let her go. So the contract is signed, the match is on. I still am on board with hoping that this is going to be the main event. I've said that before and I'm sticking by it. I'm not sure if it will, though, especially with how this Roman Reigns and Jey Uso feud is going. But I am still holding out hope that maybe they will let the women in the show. But after this one, we get the Law and Otis second segment. And this one is pretty much just witnesses on the stand. And the first one is John Morrison. He's up there crying, literally, saying that Otis physically assaulted him. The next person's Rey Mysterio. And he's basically saying that Otis won it fair and square. He was on the stand as a witness from the perspective of somebody who was in the Money in the Bank ladder match. And he came to the defense of Otis saying that he actually won the match, blah, blah, blah. And he deserved it. Asuka's next. She just basically speaks her gibberish that you can't really know what she's saying. And then we get a quick appearance from Teddy Long, which is very random, but I was a fan of that as well. And then Tucker's on the stand last, and he's kind of the one person who actually has a little lengthy, I guess, testimony or whatever you want to say, whatever you want to call it. And he basically is just making his case for how The Miz has been trying to ruin Otis's life, and that all Otis has been able to think about is beating the crap out of The Miz, which kind of starts it makes the courtroom kind of get a little bit hostile, and they show the to be continued sign again, which at that point I knew that it was going to happen later in the night. It actually happened immediately after the commercial break, and JBL comes back to his seat. And he's actually speaking kind of logical for once. Like, I was actually like, wait, JBL's saying this? Like, I was impressed with what he was saying. He says that Otis is a WWE superstar. So all of these things, or if all of these things are crimes, then he and Ron Simmons, talking about JBL himself, he and Rob Simmons will be serving life sentences. He says that it's basically in his job description to do all the things that The Miz was trying to sue him for. And he also points out that the briefcase hasn't been neglected because it clearly states in the contract that Otis has up to a year to cash it in. So you're thinking that JBL is all but going to make it official that the case is over and that Otis gets to keep his Money in the Bank briefcase, and that's that. But before he makes it official. The Miz pulls out a black briefcase that apparently had money inside. I mean, you didn't actually get to see what was in there, but whenever JBL opened it, the cash sound or coin sound, I mean, a money sound came out, and he just looked like he just seen $1 million, I guess. I don't know, because he immediately changes his mind, and he announces that there will be a match this Sunday at Hell in a Cell between The Miz and Otis, and the winner gets the Money in the Bank briefcase. And I'm not really sure how to feel about this, just because I've been on record by saying that I do not like the briefcase on Otis. However, I do not want it on The Miz either. Like, if you were telling me, yeah, it's going to be off Otis, but it's going to be going on The Miz, I would probably rather it be on Otis, just because I don't know what to expect. With The Miz, I know that he's going to cash in. He's probably going to lose, which might happen to Otis too. But there's still the chance that you just, I mean, you never know. You can do more with Otis, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But I don't want it to go to The Miz, so I really hope that Otis can retain it. If they take him off, if they take the briefcase off of him, I hope they do it another way. But I just do not want it to go to The Miz. So if that's the case, then, man, that briefcase is even worse than what I thought. But anyway, moving on here, we actually got a pretty good match with Seth Rollins and Buddy Murphy. I noticed that Buddy Murphy went back to his original gear for a while there. He was kind of doing the Seth Rollins thing where he said disciple on the side, and it was kind of similar to Seth Rollins' gear. But he is back wearing his solo stuff, and this was actually a pretty good match, as you would expect. These guys can both go, they have chemistry together, and Murphy proved once again that he can hang with the best. He had some good showings last year against Roman Reigns, which really got his name out there. This was no different. Him and Seth Rollins did a pretty good job. But this whole segment, I mean, this whole program is weird, just with the Mysterios and stuff, because during the match, they show Aaliyah watching backstage, and she's just watching the match, obviously. And then Rey and Dominik walk up, and they're like, Aaliyah, what are you doing watching this? Like, stop. And she's just saying, no, I'm watching Buddy Murphy. And basically, they're trying to pull her away, and she doesn't want to. She says she can do whatever she wants. So they clearly don't want her to watch it, but they cut away. But eventually they go back to the backstage view, and you could see that she's still there watching it, and Rey and Dominik are standing there right beside her watching it too. So it's kind of weird that they were trying so hard to get her to stop watching, and then they would immediately just stand there. It's like they just gave up and like, well, if you're not going to leave, then we're going to stand here too. I don't know. I mean, this whole thing was pretty funny to me, and I know it wasn't meant to be funny, so it's not necessarily a good thing. But the match rolls on. Seth Rollins eventually wins, as expected. And after the match, he pulls out a kendo stick from under the ring. And once again, it shows the backstage camera angle where Aaliyah is basically begging Rey and Dominik to go help him, saying, please go help him, please go help him. They say no. So she says, well, if you're not going to, then I will. And she goes out there, and Buddy Murphy does take a few shots from Seth Rollins with the kendo stick, but before he gets too far into beating him, Aaliyah kind of jumps in front of him to almost like shield him with herself, because Seth obviously isn't going to hit a girl, but he kind of slithers out of the ring, or at least for a little bit. He doesn't go completely out of the picture, but Dominik runs out to basically tell Aaliyah, what are you doing? This isn't our business. Stay out of this. And he turns his back. And of course, Seth Rollins jumps in the ring and hits Dominik from behind and starts beating him up, which causes Rey Mysterio's music to hit. And he runs out, of course. And Seth runs again. And he gets away this time, but Murphy's still in the ring. And Aaliyah's still in the ring, and they're kind of questioning her again, telling her to stop, that she needs to quit. Dominic is actually telling his dad that he needs to stop bringing her. And Ray was saying, well, she's here to support you. And while them two are going back and forth, she walks over and she starts to comfort Buddy Murphy. He's getting up. He actually took a pretty big beating, not with the kendo sticks, just from Seth Rollins. I mean, this was a physical match. There was actually a point where he did have a botch where he ran and tried to do like a suicide dive over the top rope when Seth was standing on the outside of the ring. He definitely overshot it a little bit, and that's whenever they kind of started to sell a arm injury or a wrist injury, something like that. I wasn't sure if it was legit or not, but that's what they were going with. Aaliyah was comforting him, and it was kind of awkward. This is where I say that this got weird, just that she was kind of just, I mean, basically not holding him, but like she had both of her arms on him. He could barely stand up, and the whole time he was like looking at Dominic and Ray in their eyes, like just like with, it wasn't like he was intentionally looking at him weird, but that's just what I saw from my perspective. It was just a weird scene. I'm just trying to like picture if it was real, like how awkward I would be in that situation if I knew that a legend in my industry did not want me to be associated with his daughter, who I'm like 12 years older than, might I add, and they clearly don't want me to be there. Even if she feels a certain way, you're probably going to say, look, I do not want any problems with your Hall of Fame dad when I'm trying to make a career here. But, I mean, obviously it's a storyline, but that's just kind of how I look at it. And what makes me think it's so weird is putting myself in that position where if that were me, I would be like, please get away from me. I do not want any problems with your dad. But anyways, so I do not think this is getting over anytime soon. We had some hope for at least a little bit that Seth Rollins might be getting his way out of it, but it appears that he is tangled up in this web just like Buddy Murphy is. But quickly about Seth Rollins, I noticed that he has changed up his look a little bit, nothing too drastic, but if you notice, for the longest time, Seth Rollins always just kind of did that man bun thing with his hair soaked. Anytime he did like a backstage interview before his match, or he would just rock it just normally down. But I've noticed that he has been kind of having it really wet, and he just slicks it back. Like it's just really slick back going down his back. And just pay attention next time you see him. You might notice it's just kind of a small thing that he has been doing only since he got drafted to SmackDown. That's literally when he started it. So Seth Rollins is somebody who takes that kind of stuff very seriously. But after that, we have the main event, or the last segment, whatever, however you want to look at it. But it is Roman Reigns coming to the ring. And this was promoted all evening as the quote-unquote tribal consequences that Roman was going to dish out to Jey Uso. But before he could even get a word out, he's interrupted by somebody on the Jumbotron who was supposed to be Jey Uso. But little side note here, he had a mask on, he had a hat on forward and a long sleeve shirt on. I seriously said to myself, like, I was ready to like start doing a conspiracy theory if they weren't gonna address it themselves like they eventually did. But I was literally thinking to myself when that was going on, I was like, that might be Jimmy Uso, just because in my opinion, I've said it before, I think that Jimmy Uso is better on the mic, and I just thought that they seriously were trying to possibly pull one over on us by making us believe that that was Jey Uso and not Jimmy. So I was actually waiting to see how they were going to do that, but whenever they finally revealed him, he took off his hat, you saw his hairstyle, he pulled down the mask, and he said, my brother's right behind you. And Roman Reigns turns around, gets attacked by Jey Uso. Jey Uso does the frog splash, his music plays, and he kind of leaves. And even I thought that SmackDown was going to go off the air with Jey Uso getting the upper hand on Roman Reigns, but that was not the case as he made it up the ramp and began celebrating with his brother. Roman Reigns picked up the mic and delivered on the consequences that he promised. He told Jey Uso that if Jey wins, that he, as in Roman, is not who he says he is in the WWE. He's not who he says he is in their family. And he says that he can live with that. But he asks if Jay can live with the consequences if he loses. Roman says that if he loses, that him and his brother are both out. He's talking about their family. He says that him and his brother are both out of their family. Their wives are out of their family. Their children, their children's children will all be out of the family. And this kind of just made you believe. I mean, even the Usos were doing a good job just acting like they were just, you know, really upset about him saying that. This has been a really, really good program. And this go-home match, this go-home segment, in particular, really got me excited for what we might have in store this week at the Hell in a Cell match. I'm not sure if we might see Jimmy Uso try to interfere. I'm guessing something like that might happen. But I'm just expecting a pretty good physical I Quit match inside that Hell in a Cell between these two. This will likely be the end, especially with stipulations like that. We'll see what happens. But I do not expect Roman Reigns to drop the title anytime soon, and definitely not to Jey Uso. But I kind of led into it right there, guys. That's the end of SmackDown. But before we close it up here, I want to get off my quick Hell in a Cell predictions. Matt obviously has a show that will be coming out this weekend before the pay-per-view with the official Hell in a Cell predictions, just the prediction show. I'm just going to get mine off quickly here. The Universal Championship match I just mentioned, I already tipped my hand there and said that Roman Reigns is who I think is going to win that. The WWE Championship match, this is a hard one right here, I'm not going to lie. But I am going to put my name behind Randy Orton and think that he does take the title from Drew here and gets himself a nice run with that WWE Championship, leading in to the beginning of 2021, Royal Rumble season, WrestleMania season. Edge should be getting, I mean, not close, but I mean, around that time, he should be getting close to getting to return, and that is what everybody wants to see. So we'll see if Randy can get the job done this week. But after that, we have the SmackDown Women's Championship, which is also going to be in a Hell in a Cell match. And I think Bayley is going to win that one. I don't think that Sasha is going to win it yet. She might. I mean, this one's actually pretty tough too. I want to say that Sasha is going to win it at possibly Survivor Series, maybe at the pay-per-view after that, which I think is TLC. I'm not exactly sure, but I do think that they are going to keep rolling with Bayley here, but I would not be surprised if Sasha won, but Bayley is my official pick. After that, we have Elias and Jeff Hardy. I'm going to go with Elias here. I feel like him just coming back from injury, Jeff Hardy kind of bouncing around from feud to feud, different opponent to different opponent. I think Elias is kind of the guy who has a little bit more of his feet on the ground with what he's doing. I'm not sure about that concert that happened on Monday night. That was kind of weird, but I do think Elias is going to get the win here against Jeff Hardy. And The Miz versus Otis for the Money in the Bank. I'm picking Otis strictly to speak it into existence that The Miz does not end up with this briefcase. I would much rather it stay on Otis and have him lose to whoever he cashes it in on than have to hear Miz and Morrison go off and on about what they're going to do with the briefcase or whatever. But after that, we have Buddy Murphy and Seth Rollins. I definitely think Seth is going to win this. I'm not a big fan of giving matches on Friday that we're going to see on Sunday. Why not just save it for the pay-per-view? But I do not think that there's any way that Seth Rollins is going to lose to Buddy Murphy at a pay-per-view. This could be something with the Mysterios. They could have a little of their hand in this. Maybe the feud or that program ends at Hell in a Cell, but I am not sure. And the Kevin Owens versus Aleister Black match, I think that all signs point to Kevin Owens. He's being utilized a lot more than Aleister Black, who is barely being used at all. I don't think it makes a lot of sense to give Kevin Owens the loss here whenever he is somebody who you're using and you're building up a lot more. But this could be the moment that Aleister Black uses to get that push started, or whatever you want to call it. But that is all I got for you this week, guys. I really appreciate you guys listening to me. Like I've said before, this is something I look forward to doing every week. I appreciate Matt for giving me this opportunity. I'm definitely looking forward to listening to his prediction show also, to see what his thoughts are. I'm pretty sure he said he was joined by his co-host, Ashley Mann. She's one of my favorites as well. I'm a big fan of her, Anthony DeMarco. There's a lot of good hosts on this, guys. So if you haven't already checked out the WWE Rivalries hosted by Anthony DeMarco, that is a must listen every week. He does a great job with those rivalries. And anytime Ashley gets on, you already know it's going to be a good show. She really knows her stuff. But as far as I go, guys, I will talk to you guys next week.